Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Vikram Venkatasubramanian, the founder and CEO of Nandi Security Incorporated, a cybersecurity company with a product, Cavalon, to protect smart homes and smart businesses from cyber threats and privacy threats. With three master's degrees in the fields of mathematics, computer science, and business, Vikram has over 25 years of experience in technology. Thanks so much for joining us today. Please share more about you and what you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Please share more with our audience about yourself and what you do with Nandi Security.
Absolutely. So you gave me a great personal introduction. So I'm based out of Westford, Massachusetts. Been in the Massachusetts area for about 24 years now before. And I moved here from the Midwest, where I went to school and I worked for a few more years back in the mid to late 90s. Been in the Westford area for about 15 years now, mostly in the Metro Northwest area, worked in the cybersecurity industry all along. Most of my career, I worked for big companies and I worked in cybersecurity for either at big companies or with big companies to protect other big companies, right? Mm-hmm. And along that way, I had the opportunity to hang out with some of the world's foremost cyber defenders. I got to go out to dinner with them, hang out with them, et cetera. And the conversation would always gravitate to all these guys, like these super brains, all talking to each other and telling each other, sharing notes on how they protect their home. Mm-hmm. And I was very curious. Even 15 years back, I was very curious, like, why are you guys trying to protect your home? Like, why do you need to do that? Like, and fast forward, now you know why, right? Everybody has smart devices. The average home today has about 22 smart devices in America. I have about 20, 21, like I'm slightly below average. The second problem, in which a lot of people have started becoming aware of, is privacy and data, right?
Yes.
And when I looked at what these experts were doing, and that includes me, right? I consider ourselves privileged to have been in that industry and been exposed to the technologies and the tools and have the skill sets and the knowledge, which took years to develop. So we can defend our homes well. We know how to do it, right? But that doesn't mean that I should stay privileged and be the only ones being able to do it. It should be simple and easy for anyone to be able to defend their home or small business from both privacy and security violations. So that's when the aha moment happened in terms of, like, how do I take these technologies and how do I make it simple, digestible, affordable, and easy to use for anybody to be able to protect everything in their home, everything in their small business, etc. So that is the motivation for starting Nandi. We very innocently quit our full-time jobs and dived into building out our product 1 week before the pandemic started.
Wow.
It worked out really well. Since that point, because everybody's working from home, etc., it worked out excellently. So we built out two products. We are in the market. We are now nationwide. And actually, as of last week, international as well.
I love that. So with the services that you provide and the product that you have, I'm guessing individuals can hire you, but do you ever see, like, bigger corporations hiring Nandi and then having you focus on protecting, like, the homes or devices of their employees and almost doing it on, like, a bigger scale in that aspect?
Yeah, we tried to not focus on the enterprise cybersecurity space just because there are a lot of high-end vendors in that space and companies have the budget to be able to go buy it. But that being said, so we focus on small and medium businesses where they may not have the budget, they may not have the skill sets, etc. The tools that are available at those kind of budget levels are very complex. And not only that, when you have those kinds of tools, you also need a staff to be able to manage and operate that as well, right? So those are companies that can do that and have a higher level need. So for example, a home doesn't have compliance and governance risk exposure or needs, right? So you don't need those kinds of tools and those kinds of staff attached to it. However, you really need protection across all of your devices. So it's a different problem set and a different kind of market that we focus on just because this market needs simplicity and comprehensive coverage, as well as all of that being affordable.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that anyone listening to this knows the importance of protecting their home and protecting their business. But in case anyone needs some convincing, I'd love for you to break down the benefits of protecting both of those assets and why people should do so.
Yeah, this is curious, right? I've traveled the world over the last 15 years while I've been in the cybersecurity industry to various conferences. I'd get on a plane and somebody would strike up a conversation next to me and say, "What do you work in?" And I say, "Cybersecurity." And the first thing they would always say is, "Does this thing listen to me?" Right? And I laugh. I've always laughed about it. Right. So the fundamental question actually is in everybody's mind. But let me lay out some data as well. Mm. Right. There are two problems here. There's security and then there's privacy. And when it comes to the home, the two are linked. And I'll explain why I'm saying this and what exactly how it can be done. So like I said, average home about 20 odd devices. Say you have about 10 odd devices and people don't even think about what are computers, right? So people are used to having laptops, desktop computers and putting antivirus on it. But they're not thinking that this thing is a computer. It is. And it talks to the internet, right? Your television is a computer. Pretty much every TV you can buy today is a smart TV. You can't go back and buy an unsmart TV anymore. It has apps on it. It has an operating system on it. So you need, if you put antivirus on your laptop, why didn't you put antivirus on that? Well, you can't, right? It's a different kind of computer. So you got to think about everything in your home that is a computer. So why do bad guys want this, right? So bad guys want it because these things hold your data. They can get your money through that, right? So they can get your employer through that. Right. So people work from home. So maybe I attack the TV and then get into the corporate laptop. Right. This has been done on some very major hacks as well. And last but not the least, they want to be able to also use your devices. Right here in New England, one of the biggest hacks that happened on the internet, which took down a third of the internet, happened right here. A company out here in Medevac, New Hampshire, which controlled a third of the internet's traffic, got attacked by home cameras and home routers. Russians or foreign entities basically took over control of thousands upon thousands of home cameras and routers and baby monitors, etc. And they used those devices to attack a company that controlled one third of the internet and took down the internet. And this is an active problem right now. We work with broadband service providers around the country today. And as we speak right now, there are foreign countries which are actively attacking homes and converting devices into botnets, right? So there's a security problem, which is once you let somebody into your home, there's a reason why you don't live in a glass house and walk around showing everybody exactly what you have, where you have, et cetera, right? When it comes to the internet, you do live in a glass house. So you do need to address that security problem. The second problem is privacy, which is your data, right? When it comes to your data, people say, "I have nothing to hide." Yeah, but Mr. Hacker, I want to know what device you use in your home. I'd love to know what your first name, which is your favorite color, what is your first car, which is the first city you went to. I'd like to know all of that piece of information because you probably lose that as a question in your password reset somewhere, right? Your mother's maiden name, your date of birth, etc., right? So knowing where you shop, where you live, what habits you have, what interests you have, where you work, your commuter, all these pieces of information are actually valuable because having more of this allows me to target attacks against you on a very personal scale. Instead of me saying, "Hey, click on my phishing email," if I say, "Hey, you may have dropped your key at the CVS yesterday evening when you were there, and please click on this link to send me your address," right? You're more likely to click on the ladder, right? So the personalization matters a lot, both from a security perspective. The second piece of the privacy aspect is that you're not just being exploited by known bad guys like hackers and nation states. You're also being exploited by companies, right? Companies want your data because they can charge you different prices. They can exclude you from services. They can increase prices on you, et cetera. And a lot of exclusions happen to everybody as a result of this. So it's literally it's a well-known marketing phrase called prime vulnerability moment. You can be triggered to go do something that's not in your best interest by the data that you've revealed to another company. And this literally happens to each and every one of us, maybe even hundreds of times every single day. right? And the reason they're able to make those decisions and manipulate you in certain directions, and you think you're getting a coupon, whereas you're really not. You might be paying a different price, or you may be buying something you didn't intend to buy, right? That exposure costs us a lot. Let me put it this way. Let me put to you numbers how much it costs. If you just take the market caps of the publicly traded data broker companies and you divide it by the population of the US, on an annual basis, each one of us yields them $2,200 or $2,300 per year. So for a family of four, you're literally giving away 10 grand a year to somebody, and you don't know who you give it to, what they use it for, and whether it comes back to bite you.
Right? Oh my goodness.
So people think they can anonymize data, but Nature magazine published research showing that with 15 pieces of data, 99.98% of Americans can be individually identified, right?
Oh, geez.
With less than that, 85% can be individually identified. Right. So there is no such thing as anonymization. And the data broker industry trades 1,500 plus pieces of information about each and every one of us thousands of times a day in an automated fashion. So you only need 1/10 of that or 1% of that to individually identify you. Right. So how do you keep your anonymity? How do you preserve your privacy? Which, by the way, is a fundamental right. It's the Fourth Amendment. It's illegal seizure. Right. And how do you reduce your security risk as a result of that? So this is why I think people need to start taking everything that they do very seriously, because all our life today is online.
You nailed it. And I mean, I love the overview that you gave of both privacy and security, because people, I mean, I know I didn't know the difference between the two and really what goes into it. And I think it's incredibly valuable information for people to know in this day and age, like you said, with people working from home and things constantly happening. I mean, recently what happened to Harvard Pilgrim, didn't they go through something similar where they had a huge cybersecurity, or I don't know, privacy, something that happened to them. And I mean, it's big companies that are happening to it. And if it happens to the big corporations, it can happen to the small businesses as well.
It absolutely does, right? And we are seeing around the country, ransomware attacks target small businesses. We're seeing ransomware attacks target schools as well. Right. This year, especially, the numbers are really, really spiking. The government puts out numbers on these, various school districts and school boards puts out numbers on these. And there is a reason why this is happening, because there's money. There's you can extract money, you can extract data, and also extract use of your devices. Right. So as long as these motivations remain and it becomes easy to do this, they're going to continue to do this. Most people have left their doors completely unlocked when it comes to the digital front.
Right. And I know that there are some, I guess, quote unquote, obvious signs when people know when they've gotten hacked or anything along those lines. But if someone is unaware if their cybersecurity or privacy is at risk, one, how do they know if they've been hacked or have had ransomware attacks to them? And two, on the opposite end, if people feel like their security or privacy has been compromised, what should they do to fix it in addition to hiring like a professional like yourself?
Got it. So one thing I have to say about cybersecurity, right? There is no such thing as 100% protection. It's a risk reduction game, right? So you lock your front door, you get a nice strong front door, but if I crash through that with an SUV, you're not stopping me, right? Exact same way, right? So it's a risk reduction game. So with that as a preface, let me talk about how do you know if you're hacked, right? Well, there are obvious ways, right? If your identity is stolen or your ransomware and your laptop's locked out, the obvious ways, those are easy, right? So let's preclude that, because it's hitting you and hitting you in the face. The more unlikely scenario is that, for example, say somebody's taken over your device and maybe they've installed a crypto miner on your device, right? And you're just thinking you're working on your laptop and your laptop's like suddenly slow or iffy and stuff like that. It could be a case that they've installed a crypto miner, or they're extracting data, or just recording you playing and watching you all day or something like that, right? So there are ways to detect it, but you're going to need some software to be installed on it and understand it. Mm-hmm. But if you do see significant, if you have a device that's working fine, you've really not installed any new software other than patches and updates from the manufacturer, and then you're seeing a significant degradation of the performance of your device, I would run a scan on it or call a professional to run a scan on it and have it checked out. Now that's easy for something like a laptop, etc., right? But what about your smart speaker? What about your security cameras that are outside your home, etc., right? That's where, I mean, there are tools available. It takes a little bit more technical savvy and skill. So for example, everybody has an internet router in their home, right? So you can actually plug in certain software tools that are available for free and look at the traffic and see if you're seeing something anomalous. Now, it does take a lot of skill and knowledge to be able to do it. However, in this day and age, with YouTube and TikTok and all these kind of resources available, there are ways for you to spend some time and learn to do it. And this is a life skill. I think of it as a life skill that will serve you good in the long run anyway. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So the easiest way to do this is to really run these open source tools like a Wireshark or something like that at the router level, at the laptop level, and look at the download network traffic, and you'll be able to see it because it's all there. Right. But like I said, that takes skill, that takes a lot of knowledge and training. However, it's doable. The other thing is that you can actually also look at device logs or device behaviors. Say you see anomalous logins, right? Some devices will actually, hey, you got a login from Belarus, right? Is that you? That's one way to find out. So what I would do is that I would enable a lot of tools, and you have to think about this as apps, devices, and websites, right? Everything you use. A lot of reputable companies and services will give you some kind of tools to give you notification. They'll either enable some kind of a second factor of authentication. So if somebody else tries or has your password and they break in, they're not able to get the second factor, you'll get a notification, right? So wherever possible, whether whatever app, device, or website you're on, see before you use it, see if they allow for these kinds of tools or monitoring tools or settings that you can enable that will give you these notifications. That by far is one of the easiest, cheapest, lowest knowledge ways for you to be able to enable. Second, as protection, is the first line of protection is always passwords. Just make it as strong as possible. Let me put it in perspective in numbers. There are automated password cracking tools out on the dark web, right? John the Ripper is one of the more popular ones. John the Ripper can, any password that you have, whether it's complex, will crack in just a matter of minutes, anything less than 11 characters, right? Oh, wow. So letters, numbers, and characters, it'll crack in just a matter of minutes, sometimes in seconds, right? If it's in 6 characters or less, it's like almost instantaneous and it'll crack it, right? So you've got to be 11 characters or more, because of that. At that point, mathematically, it becomes a task of hours rather than minutes, right? So now you're increasing the risk as well as the cost for somebody who's trying to hack you, right? So 11 characters or more on everything wherever possible, second factor enabled, settings enabled that give you notifications. And last but not the least, if you're willing to spend the time and effort into learning a tool like Wireshark, use that in monitoring a network.
Oh my gosh, I love all of the advice that you've given, especially because our audience being small business owners, I mean, everyone has something to learn, and it's just so crucial to be able to implement this stuff. And one thing I will say too, I mean, I love the password idea of having at least 11 characters. And I'd also say with that, like having a different password for every single thing you use. I mean, owning a marketing agency, I have clients who previously had used the same password for all their accounts. And I told them you need to have different passwords for every website or login or whatever it is. Cause if they can crack it one time, then they have access to everything.
Exactly. Right. And by the way, once your password is cracked, it's available on the dark web. And a lot of these hacker tools will actually go take that password, and it'll take your ID, and it'll go hit every other one of those common sites. So it'll go hit Gmail, it'll go hit Outlook, and it'll go hit Hotmail, and it'll go hit Netflix, and it'll go hit Amazon, and test the same ID and password. There are automated tools to use it, right? And so pretty much once they get your password, they can probably get into about 6 or 7 of your accounts where you reuse that password. So in this day and age, it's absolutely critical. And very important. I understand it's hard to remember it, but there are so many tools like in your MacBook and your iPhone, there's a password manager available. So I would recommend the use of these kinds of tools because it's your first layer of protection to everything.
Right. And another thing that unfortunately many businesses see is phishing. I unfortunately know someone who had received an email from her boss asking to buy gift cards. And so she bought thousands of dollars worth of gift cards and it was not her boss. And so that's something that many businesses are seeing now. And so I'd love if you could share more about phishing specifically, because it can sometimes be difficult to know if it's actually the person or not. And so I just love to hear your recommendations on what businesses can do to protect themselves from phishing scams in that aspect. And also, if it does happen to them, how can they reverse the damage?
I'm so glad you asked this question because there's so many conceptions as well as misconceptions about phishing, and people need to start getting aware of it. First of all, when you say phishing, you know how you immediately said email? Most phishing these days doesn't happen on email. It happens on social media, right? Over 50% of phishing happens on social. It might be a WhatsApp chat. It might be a Facebook Messenger. It might be a Slack message, right? So phishing links, gaming channel, Discord, it could be anywhere there as well. So a phishing link can be distributed whatever the media, right? So whether it's email. Email is cheap because your emails are all out there. They can pull them off the dark web. There are automated tools that just blast these emails out to everybody. And yes, out of that, 99% will not click on it. And even the phishing filters might catch it. But there's 1% who do open it. And then another 1% out of that who will click on it. And that's all they need economically to be able to capture it. Right? So this person made them thousands of dollars. Their total investment was probably 10 cents. Right. So exactly that. Right. The second thing about phishing is that it's not enough to just not click on the link. It's also important not to open that email, because you know how you've been at previews or you just open it and you read it. There's content in there that sends signals to the hackers to say this is an active email. Right. So that's valuable information. So now they can say, OK, you didn't click on that. So let me make another one that's more personalized to you and hit you another way. Right. And maybe they don't hit you on email, they'll hit you on social media.
Yeah.
Right. So it's very critical to not even open these in any fashion. Right. So what I will do is on my phone, I'll just open up my email, and on my list screen like this, I'll just look through and select all of them and delete them right away. The second thing about phishing is that it's, like I said, cheap. But it can also be highly automated. And now with the advent of AI tools, it cannot be automated and personalized. So people need to be very aware that it can be very, very, very personal. It can talk about a lot of things, have a lot of your information about you that you don't think anybody knows, and target you that way. Third, phishing doesn't, like I just said, doesn't just happen on email. It happens on social media, but it also happens on voicemail. It also happens on SMS. So you may hear of phishing in other. It's also called vishing sometimes when it's voicemail. It's called smishing when it's SMS, right? So yeah, there are all these other phrases for phishing as well. So the reality is that, yes, you need some phishing protection, but you know what's the best phishing protection? Just plain human awareness, right? Yeah. Just it's that fundamental human sense of walking into a dark, of not walking into a dark alley, right? There's a reason why you see it and you tend to avoid it. The hair stands on your back. You need to start developing that muscle memory and kind of identifying these, and also checking these links, right? So if it does look really authentic and you feel like I have to take action, but maybe you should just look at the email preview or the link preview, right? So sometimes they'll give you a bit.ly link so you can't see the whole link, but if you right click on it without actually visiting the website, you'll be able to see the whole link. You can then copy that URL, and then you can go to like a URL reputation site of some kind from a reputable vendor, like one of the big security names that you know, paste it in there, and they'll tell you, hey, this is suspicious, or this URL has only been active for the last 24 hours, right? So those kind of signals are given to you, so you can start to make a decision as to what risk you have before you actually click on the link and visit it.
Great suggestions and advice. And I also love that you reiterated the fact that phishing happens beyond so much more than just email. I mean, a common one that I see with my marketing clients is Meta support messaging them on Facebook saying their Facebook page has been violated of going against the terms and conditions of Facebook. And I think what happens and why these, unfortunately, phishing scams are successful is because it triggers an emotion in people and they get really nervous and scared and they don't want to lose their Facebook page. So they are so tempted to click on it. And I think you exactly nailed it of just being aware. And before taking any action, taking some time to sit on it, think about it, ask yourself, is this real or is this might not be? And if you take some time to really think it through and reflect on it, I think you'll probably take a much better approach moving forward.
Absolutely. And I mean, if there's nothing new under the sun, right? I mean, it's the same thing as somebody approaching you on this in public and saying, hey, can you just come over there around the corner? I need your help really bad for something. And without your help right now, I'm good. So they affect, it's the same cycle. It affects your psyche. They try to work on your psychology, just like in a physical scam, and in this case, in a digital scam.
Yes, absolutely. And also going back to your additional point too about not only having strong passwords, but also two-factor authentication. Another thing that I immediately tell my clients to turn on if they don't have it on, because I mean, how many times do people get their Facebook accounts hacked? And now the hacker is messaging their friends list, asking for money and stuff like that. I mean, you just can never be too careful.
Absolutely. And I'd like to make an additional point out there as well, right? So
yeah.
A lot of people think about second-factor authentication as SMS. That's very risky, right? So SMS can be cloned. People can do a SIM switching attack on you. They can actually socially manipulate your telephone company to take control of your phone. And then next thing you know, they have all your SMS codes, right? So wherever possible, and not every product and software supports it, but wherever possible, you should get yourself something like a second factor authentication app of some kind, right? So these are free. So Symantec makes one, Google makes one, right? Completely free. So for example, you can connect all your banking accounts and say, hey, this is my second factor authentication. So it's tied to an app rather than the phone itself. And that is your second factor as opposed to your SMS code.
Smart. And something I didn't even know. I feel like I'm learning so many new things. One thing I also want to ask too, and this might be an ignorant question, but when you help people protect their homes, it's all the devices in their homes. Does that protection stay when people go outside of their homes, like if their mobile device, their iPads, their laptops? I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so our product is purely for the home. So when you leave the home, it does not protect you. So we protect everything in the home, your smart refrigerator, your television, your laptop, when your phone comes into the home, it's protected, etc. But that is as it stands today. We are actually working on some capabilities that are going to be included in our product in the coming months.
Oh, amazing.
Where when you do leave the home, we are going to give you some protection as well. Now, that being said, say you're going out on vacation and you're going to go stay some hotel or restaurant, hotel or Airbnb for like a week or something like that. There are ways in our product where you can change some things and you can get your protection where you are for that temporary period. And then you come back home, you have to reset things and it protects your home again.
Yeah.
Right. So you can do things like that. There are workarounds in the product that allow you to do that. But as it stands this very moment in our product, it protects the home basically because that's you're pointing your router to point to our cloud-based firewall.
Gotcha.
Right. So your router never leaves your home and hence we protect your home.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. And so going along with that, when people are leaving their home and perhaps using their devices outside of it, I mean, public Wi-Fi, that's something to be wary of. And so what would you recommend people do when they're using any type of smart device, not from their secure home base?
Yeah, this is very, very critical. There's a few things here, right? When you go outside, you do three things very commonly. You use Wi-Fi, you use power, and you use Bluetooth, right? Don't is the short answer, right? Today, all cell phone plans are unlimited. I don't see a reason why I'm able to run Zoom calls off of my phone hotspot using my laptop, even if I'm in a coffee shop. So unless you're out of juice on your phone or anything like that, I wouldn't use a public Wi-Fi at all. If you do use a public Wi-Fi, you absolutely have to use it. And maybe you have to do some work on a laptop, whatever it is. You can use a VPN, but let me be very careful saying that. because I've actually talked to the CEOs of several of these companies, and there are hundreds of VPN companies. 90-something percent of them are scam companies and actually malicious actors and even foreign vendors, right? They actually will install malware. They actually spy on you, etc. There's a very small handful of VPN vendors who are truthful and are trustworthy, right? A couple advertise on television on some of the reputable channels, but those are the ones you can use, right? But that dude, understand what it does. It just hides your traffic while you're in the coffee shop from the coffee shop's Wi-Fi network and from anybody else who's connected on that coffee shop's Wi-Fi network. It is not hiding your traffic from the VPN vendor. They can see everything. Right? Any VPN vendor can see all of your traffic. So as long as you understand that and you have a trustworthy vendor, go ahead and use it. The second thing I see a lot of people do is they will plug in to charge their phones onto USB chargers in coffee shops, airports, planes, hotels, etc. That is a huge no-no. It's like literally, your hackers can go install malware on one outlet and people just come there and pick it up from there, right? It's like the easiest thing. So I would never, ever, ever charge using a USB charger. If you have your own power bank, carry that. And for God's sakes, every one of these things actually comes with a power adapter. So why do you need to use the USB charger in the first place? Charge it with a power adapter. And third is, I would, unless you're actually using your Bluetooth, turn it off. Right, Bluetooth or any other radios that you have, right? If you're not using it, turn it off. Especially in in cities like Boston, San Francisco, all the big cities where there's a heavy tech population, there are a lot of people out here with, sometimes they do it for fun, sometimes they do it with malicious intent, but there are a lot of people with the skills to do it. So I would turn off all these radios if you're not using it at all.
Yes, really good advice here. And I think it's just kind of also important. I mean, I imagine that cybersecurity strategies in order to protect your security and privacy are always evolving. And so always changing as technology changes. How do you recommend that people kind of stay on top of those advancements, where if technology continues to get better and better, they're going to have to do more and more protection? So how can businesses and also homeowners focus on that?
Absolute, right? So let me reiterate a point I talked about. You don't get 100% protection. It's a risk reduction game, right? So what you're trying to do is lower your risk and increase the cost for the attacker, right? So lower your profile and don't be the slowest person that the bear is chasing, right? You just need to be the second slowest person, right? So increase the cost. So that's really what you're doing, right? Attackers are not, they're looking for an endpoint, they're not looking for the hardest endpoint, right? They're not trying to challenge themselves. They're going to go empty out the wallets of the 10 easiest suckers they can find, right? So don't be that. So as you think about it, so to answer your question, right, as technology evolves, how do you stay abreast? You don't, right? What you need to stay abreast of is what is the least amount of risk profile that I can have? So how do I expose the least amount of data? How do I expose the least amount of devices to the external world, right? So those are the two pieces you need to be constantly thinking about. And then from a protection standpoint, you need to be thinking about what are the controls and settings that I can put in place where I make it harder. Make it 10 steps, make it 20 steps, make it 30 steps. And over with these steps, you're increasing not just the steps, you're also increasing the amount of time, right? So when a guy is trying to do an attack and target, and he wants 1,000 victims and he's targeting 20 million for those 1,000, right? He doesn't want to spend 3 hours on you, right? So that's really what you're trying to do. So enable the controls, enable all the basic controls. It's crucial to stay abreast of what are the kinds of new technologies and attacks and threats that can target you. But it's also crucial to understand how you can best defer those attacks, right? So say you may really angered somebody within the Russian government today, right? And they want to target an attack against you specifically, you're not stopping them, right? You're simply not. Such a targeted attack with those kinds of tools and those kinds of attack vectors and training skill sets, you're not stopping them. But what you will stop are like the remaining 99% of the lesser skilled or lesser resourced kind of people who are who just have malicious intent, but not the resources and the skill sets to be able to carry it out. So basic controls, good hygiene, and also awareness, right? So every time you bring an app into your home on any device, think twice, look through that company. Will they continue to exist 2 years from now, right? Because you don't want an app on your phone where the company doesn't exist and doesn't put patches on, right? Look at their privacy policy. What do they say they take, right? And are they US-based? Will they be adhering to US laws? Something to, again, you can do for free and something to do on every app, device, and service that you use. Mm-hmm. And also look at all the security controls that they enable with that app, device, or service, depending on how critical it is, right? So If you're going to connect your banking account to this kind of shopping app, then you need to know how your information is connected, secured, and also will continue to stay secure going forward.
Yeah, and that actually makes me think of, I mean, you mentioned checking your devices. That makes me think of refurbished devices. I'm always hesitant personally to buy them because I'm like, what if there is something on this? And so people are always tempted to because it's cheaper. But I mean, what would you say about that?
I mean, if you went to I don't want to speak the name of big vendors, but I'll just say one name, Apple, right? Yep. If you went to Apple and went to the Apple store and they gave you a refurbished device, yes, could there be something on it? There could be, but your risk profile at that point is much lower as opposed to buying somebody from the a refurbished device from the strip mall, right?
Yes.
So that's the big risk. Now, if you absolutely and totally have to do that, there are ways to wipe these devices clean before you use them and reinstall everything afresh, especially with a reputable vendor like the Apples and the Googles of the world. You can wipe them clean and you can install direct from their app stores, the new operating system, all that kind of stuff and work with it. A lot of people I know buy jailbroken devices, etc. That is, now you're putting yourself in a level of risk that is just way too much.
Yes.
And I just wouldn't do that.
Absolutely. This might be going along in the same vein in what you mentioned earlier, but you did touch upon AI a little bit. And I'd love to hear if you could talk about how AI is negatively impacting cybersecurity and privacy.
Absolutely, right? So within ChatGPT being released, within 2 months of it, multiple researchers as well as multiple hackers had created malware that had evaded all known antivirus, right? So to be able to do that used to be really hard and it took a lot of skill, right? Now, pretty much anybody can do it, right? So now you have these complex attacks that can happen that evade known security controls, right? Mm. So it's significant. What AI has done, it's not just AI. What has happened is that AI has gotten commoditized, right? Anybody can use ChatGPT for pretty much free, right? So that lowers the skill set and the resources needed, right? So now there are all these complex attacks happening. Second, like I talked about, there are, AI can now create large scale targeted phishing attacks, right? So based on, it can go scour data about you and make a highly personalized attack on Ashley and say, hey, yesterday at CVS, right? That kind of stuff. It can do that and can do that at scale for like thousands upon thousands of people. Third, it's given rise to new kinds of attacks. And this is the one that I'm very scared of as well, where AI can mimic your voice or your visual image.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So imagine you're the CEO of a company or even a business owner, and your IT guy calls you at 2 a.m. It sounds like him. He talks like him. And he says, the servers are going down. I need your password and you have it. I need your password because you're the thing. And I need to do this like within 30 minutes or something. You're going to give it to him. You're going to be groggy. You're going to give it to the person.
Yeah.
And this can happen visually too, where you have a visual AI mimicking somebody. So the reality is that there are new kinds of attacks emanating, old kinds of attacks happening at scale, and the skill set being lowered to be able to create it. So more people with malicious intent can get in. You needed to have intent and skill. Now all you need is intent, right?
Yeah.
So I think one of the very crucial things for any business owner, small or large, is just having a heightened level of awareness, right? So in the big enterprises, literally there's a lot of push to say, hey, this chief information security officer needs to be reporting to the board. He needs to be part of the executive tier, because companies go bankrupt overnight due to cyber attacks these days, right? So you need to bring that all the way down and scale that down to your business. Who's that chief information security officer? To your family, who's your chief information officer? Who's the chief privacy officer, right? Somebody needs to take on that mantle and do that, because this could affect your children's data, right? People could target attacks against them, or target their privacy in some fashion, right? So everybody needs to start having that mantle of one person in my business or my family needs to don the mantle of privacy officer, security officer, whatever it is. And that person's responsibility should be to stay abreast, at least aware of these new kinds of attacks. Absolutely. And how you can protect you.
Yes.
Right? So, and then the tools are coming, right? So the good guys, we are not sitting idle either, right? And it's a cat and mouse game. So we are creating tools. These will get beaten. We'll create better tools, and that's going to happen, right? So you're going to have to learn what available tools are, what are the available tools, and start to see what is the scope. And the reality of it is that no one single tool is going to be able to protect you, whether it's a business or a home, right? You're going to have layered protection, right? So you need to think about what those layers are. Passwords is a layer. Your router is a layer, right? Then you need firewalls on top of it. And then you need additional controls later, right? So these are going to start coming in, and you're going to need to be aware of these kinds of tools and understand how to use them.
Yes. Oh, I love this. If you were to give one piece of advice to business owners or homeowners listening into this episode in regards to their data security and privacy, what would that be?
It's absolutely about, don't take your data lightly. I mean, it's not just people think, when it comes to businesses, people think it is, hey, my customer's data is the most important one, or my employee's social security number. Those are the most important one. And when it comes to families, people think, hey, I kept my credit card safe. So that's not available to everybody. It's not that anymore. I can get to that freaking credit card if I know your first name, last name, and where you live, right? It's that easy. It's on the dark web. We can get it. We can get to that, right? So think about what was the absolute least minimum I should reveal to anybody, so that they're not able to go out and triangulate either from their existing sources or from third-party sources and get to everything else that I have, right? So don't give your data away for free or for cheap, right? So that is very, very critical. Second is, think about everything as a security event. You download an app, it's a security event. You've allowed somebody to install their software on your device, right? And there is a chain of companies, and it's not always one company. There's a chain of companies almost always involved. People who made libraries for that software, people who provide the cloud services, people who process payments. So there's a chain of companies. So think of everything as a security. You buy a new device for Christmas, a toy that connects to the internet, that's a security event. You download an app, that's a security event. You sign up for a new online service, that's a security event. So start putting that mindset on everything as a security event, and now your dark alley mentality will come up, and you'll start to read more about these companies and services and research it in a different light, as opposed to just saying, hey, can I play this game, right? So that's definitely what the mindset change I would recommend to any small business owner or homeowner.
And it all relates back to the point that you brought up earlier, which is just being aware, really, when it comes down to it.
And now, by far, right? Human intelligence is still hard to beat, even for AI.
Yes.
Right? So let's use it.
Absolutely. And one thing I love to do as a fun way to wrap up the show is ask our guests what their favorite local businesses are to support. And so I'd love if you could share your favorite local businesses that you frequent.
Yeah, there are a couple of, I live in the Tower of Westwood. So there are a couple of restaurants around here that we've been going since our kids were like this small. And now my sons are all grown up. So there's now they've gotten bigger. They're actually almost at the point of being a chain. There's a restaurant called Karma, and we go there not just because the food's good, but the staff, we've known them for 20 years, and we've literally seen them grow up with us as well. Another one, there's a Vietnamese restaurant close to us in Lowell called 488 that we love frequenting, just because I just love the pho over there. It is absolutely phenomenal. And the quality has stayed the same in the last 24 years that I've been in the Boston
area. Wow, which is rare.
Yeah, which is extremely rare. Like, you go there, it's the same thing I got 24 years back, which is phenomenal.
Oh, that's amazing. Love that. Vikram, this has been such an amazing episode, and I've I myself have learned a lot, so I can only imagine how much our listeners have learned too. And I'd love if you could share where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to learn more about our product is called Kavalan, K-A-V-A-L-A-N. So you can go to getkavalan.com if you're a homeowner, and you can try out the product for free. We don't even ask you for a credit card. And you can, if you like it, you can sign up. There's no software to install, no hardware to buy. You change one setting on your router and everything in your home is protected. If you're a small business and you'd like to try it, you can do the exact same thing. Go to getkavalan.com, try it. But then contact us and we can set up specific services for you to enable you to use your product for your small business.
Perfect. And I will link to those in the show notes. That way our listeners can click through, learn more, and connect with you from there. But thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Thank you for having me. This was enjoyable.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.